Welcome back to the old switcheroo, where we're talking gaming retro with Mike and JMO.
I'm Mike.
And I'm JMO.
We're still on break from full episodes before we start season two. So this is going to be the second of a feature we call the old switcheroo light switch. So instead of our normal focus on the over 250 retro games available on the Nintendo Switch Online service, we'll be talking a little bit about what gaming we've been doing during the break and some other current events for us. Subscribe or follow us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to make sure you're notified when our season two starts.
Going to be an excellent season, Mike. I'm so excited. I said the same thing last time.
It's going to be a solid season.
Yeah, it's going to be real good. And, you know, speaking of so excited, I just want to thank my friend, our friend, Brian. We finally got him on the show, Mike, but you weren't here. So I feel like it doesn't count. We got to get him on here for a full, you know, legit episode. Mike, Brian and I talked about X-Men 97. I was so, you know, lucky to be his plus one for that fan event. So he and I have seen the first three episodes, and we do a spoiler-free rundown of the 10, or as the Greco-Romans would call it, Mike.
X
ways that X-Men 97 exceeded our wildest expectations. It's like five X's.
So shouldn't there be five more?
Yeah. You're losing me. What do you mean?
Because you need... Because 10 X's, because X is 10.
We don't go that hard. But we do go hard on our impressions. We talk about the first three episodes without going into plot specifics.
So first of all, what is X-Men 97?
Sorry, yeah. Thanks for asking. So X-Men... the X-Men series ran in the 1990s. It was one of the very first animated superhero shows that was considered very high quality. It kind of sits there with Batman the Animated Series as far as, like, this is a kid's show, but it's written for adults. It really respects its adult audience. And so X-Men 97 is, for the first time since 1996, they have made new episodes for that old show. And so they have a lot of the same voice actors from the series that ran in the 90s. They have continuing storylines from the 90s. And, you know, at first I thought the animation quality was going to be sort of 90s-esque, but it's 90s-esque, but so beautifully done with such amazing fluid motion and use of color that it feels like as cool as you remember X-Men. So if you are a superhero or a Disney buff or an X-Men buff, you definitely want to check out episode one of the old switcheroo, Screen Time. Mike, what do you think of that title? That's a pretty good title, huh? If we ever do episodes about what we're watching.
Yeah. And I will stress for anyone that's listening to this, this is just on our YouTube channel.
That's right. Yeah. So head to the Old Switcheroo YouTube channel. The link is on www.theoldswitcheroo.com. All links to everything are there.
And so that was super fun. So the 97 in that is just meaning as though it's like what they would have made in 1997.
Right. But so much better than they could do in 1997. I mean, it's like animated show with, you know, I mean, honestly, like, I want to say like fight choreography and action sequences and plot and dialogue and theming that is some of the best thing Marvel has done since Iron Man. Like, I mean, I know I'm riding a real big high, but it's phenomenal.
And this was at the El Cap then?
It was the El Capitan, March 13th. They did a big fan event. There was a bunch of cosplayers. I'll be posting some cosplay pictures of the event. And you guys are going to get a big kick out of it. I won't reveal who I played, but I think you can probably figure it out. Clearly Wolverine. And they served breakfast cereal in the theater, you know, at like 8 o'clock at night because it's Saturday morning vibes, Hot Pockets.
Was the breakfast cereal like Cheerios, but X's instead of O's?
Magneto's. I'm lying, I'm dying. It was Magneto-themed cereal called Magneto's.
Honestly, it just reminds me of when on The Simpsons when Krusty had Krusty-O's.
Instead of the serrated seal one.
Yeah, and you had a special metal one in there, and it was a horrible idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so, because, metal, Magneto. So there's a through line there.
Yeah.
That's what I've been up to, Mike. What have you been playing?
So one of the things I played recently is somehow yet another game in a franchise that I didn't even know existed
Okay.
until a couple months ago,
What do you got?
which was Joe and Mac Returns.
Oh, that's right. You were on Arcadiology's podcast for this one.
Yeah, and so Arcadiology is this great podcast I've been listening to where every 2 weeks they explore an old arcade game. And so it's four guys on there, three brothers and a friend of theirs.
And
There's
you were
a
the fifth.
yeah, there's a lot of brothers doing like showing up on game podcasts one way or another.
That's a thing.
Yeah, it's a weird pattern. But yeah, and so Joe and Mac Returns came out, I believe, the same year as Joe and Mac 2 Lost in the Tropics.
Lost in the Tropics, yeah.
To the
That's
point
what we
that,
covered for our episode.
yeah, and so we have covered Joe and Mac and Congo's Caper and Joe and Mac 2. And apparently, at the same time that Joe and Mac 2 was coming out, I think it just in a console form. At the same time, Joe and Mac Returns was out in arcades. And it's interesting how some things don't change and other things do. So, for the full
Okay.
discussion, check out their episode, which should be out shortly. But what I find fascinating about it, so we saw the same bosses game after game,
Yeah,
and
the
they're
big
back.
T-Rex. Yeah, I see that.
What's interesting is that unlike the others that are side-scrolling platformers, this is as an arcade game. It's single screen, and you're
Right.
just clearing the screen of enemies, and also trying to rescue the, I think they call them cave babes in that game.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of a cave babe with a mammoth and like someone stole her clothes. Is that when you're doing really well or really badly in the game? Because
Not when you
this.
st not stole her clothes. It's that she's showering. It's like think Flintstones.
Oh, Flintstones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that is the cutscenes between like the worlds, if you want to think of it that way, that you've got groupings of levels. The cutscenes in between those groupings of levels it is right on par, if not exceeding, the questionableness that we had found in any other part of this franchise.
So what you're saying is that they're misogynist and kind of thirsty, as the kids would say.
They definitely, this is Joe and Mac's most desperate hour.
Wow. Yikes.
It was not a, and it has a laugh track on those cutscenes for some reason. Like, if you find videos of this and there's a weird laugh on there, like, that is not anyone doing that. That's in the game. That's just how it is.
I don't know if I've ever seen a game with a laugh track before.
It's just on the cutscenes, and it's strange. I have a lot of questions about this, and somehow, like that arcade game, it's very. I tried to find answers and found nothing. So, yeah.
But yeah, but did you enjoy it though? Because you're a big fan of the first game and then not so much the second, but I think at this point you're probably a fan of the series.
I will definitely say I did enjoy this game. I also enjoy the great part about arcade games when you are emulating them is the whole point of the arcade game was to get quarters out of you so you could beat the
Right.
game if you gave enough quarters.
Yeah.
And in the age of emulation, that means I can beat the game if I just keep like telling the game that I put in a quarter.
It's essentially what I do with our normal episodes by just rewinding. Like, I'm just getting more tries that way, and you in these emulated games are getting more tries.
They're usually a lot better about pick up from here and continue.
Right. Yeah, you never really lose progress as such. And so it's a single screen, and once you clear all the enemies, like, is that when the boss walks in? So it looks like the bosses also appear on the same single screen.
It would be for each world you'd go through something like four to, I guess, nine, there's 3 to 9 levels that are just clear this of enemies. And then you would have another level after that that would have the boss on it.
Right. That's
So
cool.
what,
That's cool.
yeah, I thought it was a very fun game, but there were some bits that I did not expect to see in this game. That seriously has me wondering if this was ever released in the United States.
Gotcha, gotcha. I take it the cave girl showering being interrupted is only the beginning.
To be fair, it doesn't go much beyond that, but it does go beyond that.
Yikes. Well, I can't wait to hear the episode on Arcadiology. That sounds really
Yeah,
fun.
no, it was absolutely a blast to join them for that.
Yeah.
In fact, we'll be having them on for one of our season two episodes.
Yeah, I was just going to talk about that. I've been playing through the Star Fox series, getting ready for our Arcadiology guest spot. I guess they're coming to our podcast. I don't know if it's still called a guest spot at that point. Have you started the series yet?
I have not started it at all yet.
Okay. I have just finished Star Fox and Star Fox 64, and so I'm about to embark on Star Fox 2, which was a really cool game for people who don't know. It was fully finished and canceled because Nintendo didn't want to take attention away from Star Fox 64. So Star Fox 64 is, for, in most people's minds, the second game in the series. And then decades later, when they released the Super Nintendo Classic and then the Nintendo Switch Online service, they gave people access to Star Fox 2. So I'm really excited. Won't go into specifics until we get to that episode, but it's a cool series. And I'm excited for you to try it because you're a big Star Wars boy, and it's very much inspired by Star Wars. The R wings, they're called R wings, not X wings, R wings, but still letter wing, and lasers flying, and there's definitely levels that evoke different science fiction inspirations, several of them being Star Wars. So I'm excited. You've never played it, right?
The most I've ever played any of them is I think you, me, and Crystal played Star
Star Fox
Fox
64.
64 for like 15 minutes
Yeah, we
on
did
Nintendo Switch
multiplayer
Online.
mode. Right, yeah. And I smoked you guys. I am excited though, because like, especially since you've got the Nintendo 64 controller, because someone really cool gave it to you for your Christmas.
No, it was you.
You're ha jerk. You are gonna get to play the game the way I wish I could have, because the Switch Pro controller does not quite match the form factor that the old one did. It's one of those games, that definitely was what was in mind when they designed the shape of the N64 controller. So I'm curious, and I'm eager to see when we play for that episode. I assume we'll do some multiplayer, and I want to know if you do better this time,
We will
because
see how that goes.
what else have you been playing?
So I have also, in my very rare thing of getting into a game while it's new and a big deal, because we had a whole conversation about card games last time, because we talked about Marvel Snap. And so I have decided to jump into a new card game for me.
It's not Marvel Snap, though, is it?
No, it's not Marvel Snap, it's Balatro.
Electro. Two L's?
No, 1L, which
Electro.
has taken people by storm. So this is a
Oh, poker roguelite.
yes, it is a poker roguelite game that is
Yes.
incredibly fun.
Did you get it on the Switch?
No, I'm playing it on Steam.
Okay, it's also on Switch. $15 though. So what's how does it work?
I will say that is worth it because, like, I have started playing it since our last episode, and I have 27 hours in that game already.
Wow. Wow.
Also great because the music isn't that important since it's not like a you're not on the clock. It is a really good game to play like while watching stuff, like watching a movie and also playing this.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Yeah, so
The
here's.
poker roguelite, hypnotically satisfying deck builder where you play illegal poker hands.
So basically, you start off each run with just a deck of cards, like a standard 52-card deck. And then you're playing po poker hands, and the way it does the scoring is each of the different hands has both a point total and a multiplier that'll apply to it. So something like a pair is like 10 points and a and a base of like a times two multiplier. And if you play a pair, it'll add the values of those cards onto your points. So, you know, playing a pair of kings is better than a pair of twos.
Yeah, I'm looking at the screenshots right now. I'm not ignoring you. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah. And so that's your very base level of this. So a better hand is worth more points and will have a higher multiplier. So just with the regular cards, nice and straightforward. But then it adds in some other cards. And so you have jokers, which are not cards that are in your deck. They're cards that are just always out and have, and by default, you can have up to five, and you basically you have to buy them.
One of these looks like a debit card.
Yes, which allows you to basically spend down to negative 20, if you so wish.
Okay.
So some of them give abilities like that that are very much overall the game. Some of them depend, and a lot of them are modifying what you're playing, or they're modifying bonuses in your hand, because you have as a default, I think, 8 cards. So you select which of those 8 cards to play, and you don't have to play a full set of 5 necessarily.
This is cute though, because like informing these illegal poker hands, I'm seeing that there's also one where you can use your driver's license. So I'm guessing all of these like unconventional cards have different abilities sort of themed to what it is.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. And so, but yeah, so you have your jokers, you have your planet cards or celestial cards. So there's 12 of those. I'm not sure what the 12th is yet. I've only found 11 of them that will basically level up a particular hand. So like Earth is a full house. If you can get a hold of one of those cards and use it, it will increase the base points and the base multiplier of a full house to make it stronger. So like if you focus on it, you can make two pair better than a full house or a flush or a royal flush if you so choose.
Right. So like it's kind of hard to visualize without actually trying the game. But so if you compared this to a different roguelite or a different card game, what does it remind you of the most?
Honestly,
like the frame of reference.
The two that it reminds me the most, and I don't know if this will work as a frame of reference, would be Plinko Panic and Luck Be a Landlord, which are both also sort of gambly centered roguelites that I play. Where Plinko Panic,
they also have sort of suggestive titles. Like I feel like if I saw those titles on a VHS, I'd be like, I know what kind of movie that is.
Yeah, so like Plinko Panic is basically it's different Plinko balls that have different abilities that you can power up. And then Luck Be a Landlord is this fun game where basically you have to get to a certain amount of money in a certain amount of turns or you're evicted, and the landlord keeps doing things to make that worse for you. And gotcha. Again, it's that one especially, it's a lot of figuring out the synergies.
But yeah, Have you played Inscription?
No.
Ooh, that's your homework for next time. That is the hard roguelite that most people think of. But I think this is cool because since it's poker hands, I feel like it's got an appeal that's way beyond just like traditional gamers. Like I feel like just people who like, what's the term for that? Just playing cards? I guess it's just playing cards, yeah. Right? People like playing cards.
Yeah, and you don't have to know how poker works to do this. You kind of have to pick up some of the terminology as you go. But like, I really enjoy that as you start to, because you also have tarot cards in this and you have spectral cards that really will mess with what you have. So you can start modifying the cards in your deck with those so that they have multipliers, or that you can change the suits on the cards, or you can add additional cards. So like earlier today, I played a flush house, which is not normally a poker hand.
Right. I was going to say that doesn't sound possible.
But it's not normally possible. It is possible when suddenly your deck has like 30 clubs in it.
Right. That's fun.
Yeah. And like it has challenges, and you start with a couple decks. And as you, so the way it structures a game is each game, you basically have a point total you have to get to. And you start by default, I think it's, you have 4 hands you can play and you have 4 discards you can use. And so each round you play against a small blind, or you can skip it for some reward that may be worth it.
But it's all intuitive. Like, you're getting very specific on the gameplay, but I imagine that this is, you kind of just figure this out organically.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's not choices to make here, but you, so you have a small blind and then a big blind, and then you have a boss that you can't skip that will have something like, now you can't use your spades, or the face cards are all face down and you don't know what they are exactly.
Yeah,
So
it's a randomizer modifier kind of thing.
yeah, some kind of modifier, and you basically have to get last to, it considers beating the game if you can make it to the end of 8 runs. And on that 8th run, the last boss is like a special, one of a few special bosses.
So have you beaten it?
I have beaten it several times now. So I've
Let's
unlocked several decks.
see. I'm in compute. I don't know if you can still hear
I can. But
that.
yeah. So it's like I've in the process, I've unlocked something like 100 of the 150 Jokers.
Yeah, I am looking at a Joker tier list right now. People have very strong opinions about which ones are good, which ones are bad in terms of like design.
And part of what's fun about it is, actually, this is why it reminds me of Luck Being a Landlord a lot, is there are strategies that seem very, very good for the first couple of rounds, but as the points you have to reach start increasing, they don't just increase linearly. They start increasing faster and faster.
Yeah.
So like the first couple, it's like 300, 1,000 points on like the last one, and that's pretty easy to do. I think it's 600 points, and you can do that with like a good, two good straights. Towards the end, the last run I did today was actually slightly past the end of the game. It lets you keep going after you do 8. So I was on like round 11, and I fell short because I think I needed something like 14 million. And I'm actually really proud that I did get the achievement for the first time. I played my a million chip hand, which basically involves a whole lot of cards that multiply your values. There's a little bit of like order of operations and stuff on here, but yeah, it is super addictive. It's frustrating that I'm like, I am never going to 100% this game because I've looked at the achievements and I'm just like, this will never happen. So
But people have.
on Steam, the last couple are still at 0%.
Wow.
And I think it's in, I think the one that looks like is extra impossible, and I think is 0% on Steam, is when you beat it, it will add like a little sticker onto the jokers you had at the end of that game to show that these are the jokers that you beat the game with. And you can play the game on, you have different decks, but you also have different like tiers that have, that get harder. So I think the hardest achievement is that you have beaten it on like the gold tier with every joker. And it's like, that's never going to happen. That feels like I've abandoned that achievement from ever occurring.
Are you an achievement hunter? Do you consider yourself one?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I have a
That's wild.
frightening number of achievements on, or of like games where I've made sure to complete the achievements on. So there's definitely a thing where there are games that I just know won't happen.
Right.
Crusader Kings 2 was one where it's just like some of those achievements, I was like, these are impossible. It will never occur. Civilization 5 was one of those. Terraria, I think, is doable, but is hard. But is just grindy. Like, it's just enough into the, that's a grind, but a reasonable grind. This thing,
Right.
I'm just like, this is impossible. But it is really addicting. And so for me, my goal is get everything unlocked. Like, I can do that. After that, it's, I don't think I have, I like, just, it involves a whole lot of luck and a whole lot of time. But like, I was, it felt so satisfying to play a hand today and see the count go over a million, which actually, Bellatro yesterday, I think, announced that they've just gone over a million in sales.
Oh, that's very timely.
Yeah, no, it, yeah, it synced up well when I was checking that some achievements, like, oh, that, because there is an achievement for over a million playing a hand, one hand that is worth over a million chips. And when I was checking that achievement on Steam, I saw that they put something up that they just hit a million units sold.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah.
It is super, super fun.
That sounds really fun. So let me tell you about my reasonable grind real quick, because I plugged it on our X-Men episode. I have been playing the Splatoon 3 expansion. It's called Side Order. People could have bought it months ago, but up until the last few weeks, the expansion pack just gave you like one new little multiplayer hub area to get your matches started from. And we always knew story content was coming. I didn't realize it would be a roguelite. Have you tried Splatoon 3 yet? I gave you a copy of it, a Japanese copy. I don't think you fired it up yet, right?
No, I have. I played it a bit.
Didn't grab you?
I think it was all right. I wouldn't say it grabbed me. Like I wasn't disliking it. I played a moderate amount.
So those who don't know, Splatoon is a multiplayer shooter where your goal is to ink the most turf. So every shot your weapon does will leave a splatter of your team's colored ink on the ground. And that does three things actually simultaneously. Number one, the ink on the ground determines your team's score. So whoever has more ink coverage, and when you kill an enemy, they explode in your color. So that's super satisfying. The second thing it does is that it restricts the enemy movement. If it's your color ink, they will take small amounts of damage when they touch it, and they will move through it very, very slowly. So you can create corridors and walls and, like, you know, do zone coverage to try and make the enemy's approach more difficult. And the third thing it does is it makes you move much faster and much more freely. You hold down one button to turn into a little squid, and now you're swimming through the ground like a land shark, kind of like in a cartoon. And that also means you can scale walls. So your movement options at a touch of a button are a lot more free range movement. And so it's always fun to see how they make that into a single player mode, because they're designing these levels and you're using the mechanics of the multiplayer game in really creative ways in the levels. And I'm a big fan of roguelites, so I'm stoked on it. It's super good. When you tried it, did you try multiplayer or single player?
I did some of the single player, and then I did some of the multiplayer. Okay. And I feel like multiplayer, I was not good at.
Yeah. Did you use motion aiming or joystick aiming?
I think I went to joystick aiming because I really did not like the motion aiming.
See, that's for people who can't get into Splatoon. I always say, even though it takes a while, you gotta get used to motion aiming. It's what the pros do. And there's nothing like it once you get used to that. The precision of adjustment for your aiming and your movement, it's like having a mouse, you know, and joystick is so much less finesse in a joystick than it is with the gyro sensor on the Switch Pro controller or the Switch. Are they using the gyros on the Joy-Cons or on the Switch itself? There's like three gyroscopes on the Nintendo Switch. It's kind of crazy.
I mean, it's got to be the Joy-Cons, because the Switch itself is not moving when I play.
Okay. But I play it handheld mode, so I'm never quite sure what gyroscope it's using. I'm probably using a combination of all of them, actually, to make it really accurate. But so the roguelite is really cool because you enter a simulation, and it's actually quite jarring because one thing the series is known for is its use of color. The neon greens and pinks and yellows, it's very, it pops. And this, you start up this DLC, and you're in a world of grays and whites, and it's like devoid of color. And what's really cool is that your goal is to climb this tower, and there's some big boss at the end. And, you know, as you make your way up, if you die, you go back to the bottom of the tower. But now you can use your experience points to level up and make your next run a little easier. It's standard roguelite stuff. But what's neat is that every level, they give you a new ability. And it's something small. It's like, okay, now you swim a little faster through the ground. Okay, now your grenades will respawn a little faster. Slight improvements. Normally in a roguelite, you know, I guess most roguelites, you are getting power-ups pretty much every level. And what's neat in this game is that it visually represents that by adding more color to your world. So it's like if you get a pink power-ups are movement, I think. They're all movement-related. And so now my character moves a little faster, but my character has little pink hues, and the world around me gets a little pinker. And so presumably if you get it all, it'll be full color restoration. And I really love when games are visually creative, not just like gameplay wise.
Are those power-ups that you get to select or that you kind of just like get?
You, after every level, you are offered one of three level choices. And so what level you pick will determine what your upgrade is. So yeah, you are selecting it. And so you can kind of make like a build.
Could you just go and see, I'm going to make this world as green as possible and ignore the other colors.
Well, so it's not like things would become more green. It's just that you would see what would normally be green more vividly. But if you only go for one color of enhancement / graphical layer, you'll never get the full look of what the world should look like. I think anyway, I haven't beaten it yet. I got very, very close. It's just, I think a good roguelite, even if you get agonizingly close to finishing it, if your very first thought is, okay, one more run. And that's how I feel about this one. I do wish it was a bit faster of going from level to level. I think like my favorite roguelite of all, Dead Cells. You ever played Dead Cells?
No, I've heard the name, but I don't know much about it.
It's sick. And just the movement around the world, but then also you being able to go from level to level. I think a good roguelite gets... Is it roguelike or light? I thought it was light. It's roguelike, isn't it?
Roguelike, I thought.
Okay, I've been saying it wrong this whole time. Anyway, I think a good roguelike is, very snappy, very punchy. And this doesn't quite have that, but it's got a lot else going for it.
Yeah, I think that punchiness, I think, is part of also what's made Blotter fun.
Yeah.
In part because, actually, the other thing, it sort of reminds me, not in gameplay approach, but sort of an energy, was Vampire Survivor.
Yeah, it's a great game.
Because the way that Vampire Survivor would just like start speeding things up. Like when you get, the chests that have a lot of things, and it just like the sound effects just start going faster and faster because they were kind of going for like a slot machine vibe.
Yeah.
Bludger will do the same thing. If you have a lot of multipliers that are all having to add up, like the sound effects just keep getting, after the first few, the sound effects start picking up faster and faster. And it does kind of incentivize you to be, it is very fun just to hear those going off in quicker and quicker succession because you've chained up so many effects.
Yeah, that's a really satisfying little like reward.
Yeah, it is. Definitely, I think why that appealed to me for always going back. And I think I'm more fond of something like that has much more of a unlockable approach rather than a we've increased things slightly for you.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot more of a we're going to throw something new into the mix and now figure out how to use it. Whereas I think what you're describing is a little closer to a we've increased your capabilities a bit more, but in a more predictable fashion.
Yeah. That wraps up what I've been playing. Do you have anything else?
Oh yeah, I'll go into one more, which is that I have returned to a game that I had first tried when I got a Switch and gave up on, which is Burnout Paradise.
Yeah, the Burnout series, that was a big deal. We really liked it back in the day. I could not get into Paradise. How much have you played of it?
I'm up to something like a C license or something, I think.
Okay, so you're quite a few hours in, I think.
Yeah. So basically, I had tried it before and gave up relatively quickly because I was getting very frustrated with, I think the user interface design is lacking.
Yeah, that's what kept me away from it too. I felt like I couldn't figure out how to just like, I just wanted to do a bunch of races, a bunch of crash events. And I feel like it kind of puts a lot between you and starting something. And it's supposed to be easy. Like you're supposed to just drive up to the intersection. And I think you just like honk, don't you? Something like that.
it yeah, it's hit two buttons to start.
Right, because every intersection has an event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, and
but
I think
I don't know, it's not as intuitive as it sounds, I guess.
I think that part is somewhat intuitive. I think it's a misstep that you have to unlock those by driving through those intersections, because that just feels like a tedious pointlessness. Like, there's not a sense of discovery in that, in my mind. It's just a sense of annoyance that, like, oh, I didn't drive through the intersection, so it's not on the map. Like, I'm cool with the more unique things being a, like, to find the junkyards and the paint shops and stuff, like, those don't show up on the map until you've driven past them. And that's fine. That has some sense of discovery. But this, like, drive through every intersection so that it reveals that there's an event there, when it's every intersection, just it feels like busy work in a game, where you could just put those on there. But the other thing is simply, like, I started playing that with like a 30-inch TV and gave up because I couldn't see anything in like the mini. There's too many little displays that are not, I think, well done. And so I went back to it with a larger TV, and I'm like, okay, I can work with this now for the most part. I'm still somewhat frustrated in that technically there's a check mark, but it's not done with good contrast. That, like, if you've already, so what's interesting about how they structure it is to, like, level up your license. It's something like, you know, beat 10 events, and you can do any 10. And then when you upgrade the license, it resets. But all of those stay on the map, and it really should be clear which ones you've done, like, at an instant glance. And it is not. Like, it's not that it's not marked at all. It's not that bad, but it just, that should be something that is blindingly obvious and not requiring, like, extra attention to detail.
Yeah, but the racing's still good.
Yeah, the racing is still good. I'm enjoying, I guess technically I should try the other vehicles, but I have found that, I think when I bought it, it had like expansion packs and stuff that are all included in this. And one of those was like, I think they may call it specialty vehicles or something. It's basically the, we all know what vehicle this is, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, but we're not calling it that so no one gets sued.
Right.
So I think I'm, which has, it has a DeLorean, basically. It's not, I think, you know, it's not called a DeLorean, but it's the DeLorean, and, like, it has a special thing where it hovers.
Oh, that's fun. Like, the actual Back to the Future 2 DeLorean.
Yeah, you can also get fire off the tires. And it, for some reason, it also has, like, the kit, like, red light on the front going back.
Yeah, might as well get them all in there. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it has the General Lee from Dukes of Hazzard. It has, there's some classic car that I'm entirely forgetting. And then it has the Ecto-1 that I keep using, because that thing,
it kind of sounds like a Rocket League sort of number of, except those are actually licensed, I believe.
Yeah.
These are just tasteful parodies, I guess, or tributes.
Yeah, and like, the Ecto-1 is like, I can't remember how they describe it, but it does have like a We Believe You bumper sticker on there.
Yeah, that's fun.
So it's enough to be like, yeah, you clearly know it's this, and if you adjust the paint job, you can get something close. But it's,
it doesn't have any online play, though, right? Because this is, I don't think the re-release had online play, but the original release did.
That would, yeah, it references the existence of online play, but I don't know if it actually supports it now.
Okay.
I haven't cared.
They need to revisit the Burnout franchise. I mean, Need for Speed kind of became the default, but it's not quite the same. Burnout's special.
Yeah, I mean,
that's fun.
Yeah, it's like, I do appreciate, like, when you unlock a new vehicle, the first way you have to get it is you basically have to see it drive past you, chase it down, and run it off the road. Which is always satisfied, just because even for all of the, I don't use any of those vehicles. I don't, because I'm just using the Ecto-1, really.
Yeah.
Because I can't handle, the DeLorean goes too fast, and then I crash in very bad ways.
That's a satisfying gameplay loop, though, running things off the road.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm not going to use this, but I will, it's there, so I'm definitely going to run that thing off the road. So it's definitely going a lot more satisfying on this sort of redo of it. Good. And I also am appreciative, or I'm not appreciative of it yet. I know I will be appreciative of it later when I start trying to get things completed on that game. That the things of like run into billboards and stuff like that, once you've driven through a billboard once, it like patches it rather than like make it look like new. So at some point when I'm like, I am missing two billboards, I do not have to have a day where I just spend like 5 hours driving around all of Burnout Paradise, driving through every billboard to figure out which one I'm missing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still gonna have to drive around a bit, but I can just at least go, okay, no, I can, that one has a hole in it still. I can move on. There's another billboard here somewhere I have to hunt down.
That's cool. Does it have split screen multiplayer?
I don't think so, but I also don't know.
I think and that was the big bummer for me. If I remember right now, actually, now that I'm saying it, I'm pretty sure multiplayer was exclusively online, which is a big bummer because Burnout 2, Burnout 3, and then Burnout Revenge is what it was called. But anyway, the split screen races, Brian and I used to go hard on those games.
I'm guessing this must have come out in that era where they forgot that people play games with people they know in person.
I mean, it's bad now, you know, because the re-release doesn't have the multiplayer servers like it used to. But still, I'm glad you're enjoying it. It sounds like we're all both playing really fun stuff.
Yeah, no, it is. It would be getting more time if not for the fact that I have discovered Boatro, and all my time is now going to that. Even my time that's going to other stuff is also going to Boatro at the same time.
You're a Boatro head. Boatro buddy.
Yeah, no, it is really addictive. And I've also seen the point raised that it's basically gambling without any actual loss. Like, it's not like this is a it's not like this is a microtransaction-y kind of game.
Right.
So you get all the satisfaction of winning large amounts of money or possibly losing. And I paid $15 once. So like I'm already at like 2 hours per dollar spent.
Very cool. Well, I think that wraps up what we've been playing lately, right, Mike?
Yep. Yeah. So join us next time. So we'll talk some more current gaming talk. And then a reminder that season 2 will be starting on Wednesday, April 24th, when we'll be joined by Jambo's brothers to talk Sonic the Hedgehog 2. Until then, please remember to like, follow, or subscribe the old switcheroo, and rate us or give us a review for the show wherever you're getting podcasts. You can also visit us at www.theoldswitcheroo.com to find all our social media links, as well as I am starting to use our blog features there for some game talk. And then we'd love to hear what you thought of this episode and what you're hoping to hear in our future episodes and in our upcoming season 2.
Awesome. Well, as always, thanks for listening to the Old Switcheroo, where we've been talking gaming retro with Mike and JMO.
I've been Mike.
And I've been JMO. Game on, everyone.